This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome, Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio. Glad to have you here. I got superstar Scott Brown with me. I just don't know why I said that.
Superstar? Now that's not the right category.
But I did. Well, even though you're from California, you're a superstar in other areas. Co-owner of Connie and Dick Service Center, Claremont, California. The shop's been there 63 years, and you've owned it, what, since 93?
93. I've worked here since 1990. And actually, the shop will be 65 at the end of this month. So October 1st. Yep. 65 years old. I posted a little bit ago on LinkedIn. We had our founder here. He brought his motorhome down. We did some service work. And we found some old invoices from back in the 60s. And we were going through them. And, you know, 94, he's sharp as a tack. And he looked at an invoice and he said, "Hey, I used to deliver newspapers to that guy on my bicycle back when I was like 13 years old." And I, wow, that is absolutely amazing.
I only wish that I could ever recall like that if I live that long. Yeah. Wow.
So yeah, we're happy to be providing service to the community, you know, and keeping people mobile and servicing today's and yesterday's automobiles.
So you work with your wife. She lets you go out and do all these great things that you do?
Well, as far as what, travel, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, you're working on so much stuff. Does she run the business while you're doing all the cutting edge of forward thinking things?
Yeah, she handles HR and payroll and that kind of stuff. I actually have my two daughters, my only two daughters. They work the front counter and manage the office. And while you hear them talk on the phone, they make me really proud. They really know what they're talking about.
ASE Master Certified, Diagnostic Network, Diag.net. Oh my, what a great move that was.
We're over 30,000 subscribers over in that platform now. And it's a pretty dynamic platform. So anybody that wants to further their knowledge and skill set and maybe seek some help from fellow experts, head on over there and check it out.
Who would have known green screen to now? Oh my God. Contributor to P10 Magazine. You teach all kinds of ADAS. I mean, every time someone who is a non-industry person, I'm out to dinner or something like that. And I said, I remember seeing a video from my friend Scott Brown on what the cameras see. And I tell people, you have no idea what's going on with your car and how it works.
Yeah, it is amazing. And we use that knowledge to help our customers understand what their vehicles are all about. You know, these vehicles are complex machines, and they need to be aware of what their vehicle's doing, and then that their car may need service and attention to keep those systems operating.
I got a million more things I want to talk about, but I want to really give a high five to all of our great sponsors. Hey, take your NAPA Auto Care Center to the next level with the NAPA Auto Care Gold Certified Program. Increase car count, build trust with customers, and stand out as one of the best. Talk to your local NAPA representative today. Hey, for over 30 years, NAPA Trax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the best, most comprehensive SMS in the industry. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Find NAPA Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. So, Scott, let's talk about ADAS, because you just said ADAS, and it just hit me because I was in a Keith Perkins class at Tools a few months back. And he's talking about, you know, the $99 alignment versus the $399 alignment or whatever the number is, right? And that 1 degree of off on the front radar and where that's looking. And it seems to me that there's so many people that just don't appreciate and understand in our industry, the professionals. In many cases, a major alignment has to happen. Even I think the OEs require, they don't request, they require an ADAS calibration. And we can't sell it. And you're the one who's so intimate with it. What are the girls at the counter telling clients? Hey, listen, this is a major thing we're doing. We're changing some components. We've got to put this thing back in alignment. Are they being able to sell it?
Yes. In most cases, there are certain procedures that the manufacturer requires that you do a calibration. But really, you know, at the high level, these systems can have some level of error. They will always have some level of error. And systems will benefit from a recalibration. It's just like a wheel alignment. So I am a proponent of, you know, proper care and maintenance. You know, when we're presenting these things to the client, of course, they are a little more expensive. But we're trying to position ourselves where we are now the total care, service center. We are capable of doing all of these services and getting that car back in its proper working order. In some cases, we're bundling some of these things together so that the car for sure is being fixed and put back into service. So when we see we're selling a service where, say, the vehicle has to go into service mode, where you pull the whole front end of the bumper and everything off the vehicle, they're looking to see, hey, what equipment is this vehicle equipped with? And we don't always catch it. In some cases, we quote a job and then we find out afterward, oh, this car has this stuff. We're going to need to carry these processes out. So it either turns into an awkward, communication with the client, or in some cases, we may just take care of the vehicle, put the vehicle back into service. But it offers an opportunity for us to engage with the client and get them to gain a higher level of understanding as to what is going on with their car and how it works and so on. And the conversations are interesting. I wish I could record some of these because they're all over the spectrum. Some people like the systems. Some people have had bad experiences in the past, so they carry shade over even a newer vehicle. That's always a challenge. We're working with these complex machines and we've got to put them back together right.
There's no doubt you have an ADAS calibration system, but you probably have 10 of them if I know you, and because you're testing all kinds. But are you doing calibrations for other shops?
Occasionally, yeah, we'll do some of those. I thought originally I would be doing a lot more sublet type stuff. I went to a bunch of local collision centers around here. This is back in 2019, 2020. And everyone I talked to, they already had a solution in place. All these mobile companies had already been ahead of the curve. Yeah.
So is it the mobiles that are really getting it done? But let's just think about another 8-bay shop, a couple miles down the road, a competitor, but really not. And they are doing alignments, but they're not doing calibrations. And I'm 99 and you can go down to Scott and pay through your nose for it, because unfortunately we're not professional enough to respect each other like doctors do.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that concerns me is that. And when I heard Keith's presentation, and I was wondering where the other 500,000 techs were that should have been in his class, hearing that story, do we understand, or is it that we just don't care, Scott?
90% of the industry out there probably is still just kind of going through the same mode of operation that they've been going through for the last few decades, and they just haven't adopted. Now, I've had multiple shop owners contact me and start asking me questions. Hey, what are you doing about cars with these cameras and these radars? And I'm going, I've been preaching to the choir for the last 6 or 7 years here that, you need to get in front of this. And now here we are. So it's like there's a lag, I think, going on. And we're going to start to see, I think, a pickup of this.
Tell me about that lag. Thank you for being there, because I'm sitting on the sidelines seeing a recent report, I don't have it in front of me, about the percentage of professional shops that do have ADAS calibration. And I think it's a single digit number. I don't think it's any higher than, say, 9%. And it bothers me to think, because I had a bunch of questions I was going to ask you as we moved into an EV discussion. What kind of equipment do you really need? And what's the adoption and adaption of trying to fix EVs? But we're in this ADAS thing. It's the same thing, Scott. Are we going to learn about EVs and bring them into our maintenance program just as much as we should be doing ADAS? And it reminds me of the fact that these two major technical marvels that we're dealing with in our world, we're all lagging.
Fortunately for us in Southern California, we're on the EV side. We've been working with hybrids for a long time. Toyota Lexus is our number one brand that we service here in our facility. And we do a lot of stuff, a lot of EV. And now we're getting more customers with BEVs. We've got customers, they discover us, through our normal our marketing, basically, is some social, some web presence, and word of mouth.
Word of mouth is the biggest, I hear.
Yeah. We had a recent customer with a Volkswagen GTI. He was buying a house locally here, and he said he just Googled EV service Claremont, and we popped right up. And he was so happy. He came down to meet us before he did any work, and he just wanted to check the place out. And he said, oh, wow, okay, this is great. But yeah, there are some parallelisms, right, between those two that you were just talking about, the ADAS and EVs. But, I don't know if you want to go down into the EV tooling part yet.
I do. Walk with me.
There's a lot of basic tooling capabilities that most shops already have to work on EVs. I mean, you've got chassis and suspension components, you got wheels and tires, you got wheel alignments, and then you've got diagnostics you got to deal with. So you're dealing with not only the low voltage diagnostics, and this is really, I think, where the skill set in our industry is maybe lagging, is low voltage understanding, low voltage diagnostics, and that carries over into, you know, network communications and so on. And I think a shop that has a strong understanding there and the ability to be analytical in understanding the data, it will help them solve problems on vehicles. As far as the high voltage side, you definitely need to have some core fundamental training around that. You need to have some safety training. But, you know, these cars are so well engineered that you really have to go out of your way to hurt yourself. Okay. But, you know, it can be done. So you should be always aware of what, you know, what you should be doing. You should have certain, you know, safety gear, PPE that's required. You should have that in your shop. But the majority of our work here is maintenance. I mean, and we try to promote lots of maintenance on these EVs. There is a lot of opportunity there, but the challenge there is the same. You're dealing with clients that they're driving an EV and they think all they need to do is put washer fluid in their car. It needs zero maintenance. Well, that's completely false. And just to go down this short little rabbit hole, EVs, and we've been doing lots of Teslas, okay? So let me give you an example of what happens when you're driving a Tesla and you're going to be using supercharging. You know, the client's going to go supercharge and they navigate to that supercharger. They're taking the drive units and creating a waste heat, okay? They're heating the oil in that drive unit to transfer that heat into the coolant to then heat up the coolant or heat up the battery around the coolant. They're basically cooking that oil, okay? And we've had numerous cars. We're now recommending changing this fluid intervals at 30,000 if you do a lot of supercharging, because we drop the fluid out and it's black as can be. That is not conducive for long life.
What's the weight of that? What is it? A 520?
It's like automatic transmission fluid. It's like a real, it's a real thick, they call it EDF in some cases, but it's a real thin viscosity. And of course, it's providing lubrication for bearings. But that oil is being sprayed across the stator to keep the temperature down, because that's the part that's creating all that heat and the rotor itself. But that oil is doing a lot of work. And Teslas have a filter that it's a screw-on filter. It looks just like a little Honda filter. And if you want to keep that car going for a long time, go ahead and change that fluid on a regular basis.
I'm going to get my oil changed on my EBEV. I love that. Yeah.
You know, I see online, I see people joking, oh, you know, I'm going in for my oil change. Well, actually, you probably should be going in for your diff oil change or your drive unit oil change. So that's an opportunity to sell. And of course, we've done some videos and taken pictures and we, you know, show our customers and sell them those services. But our first question is, do you want your car to last a long time? And in most cases, people go, well, absolutely, I want my car to last a long time. And we're selling maintenance, just like we do on a nice vehicle. So those same practices that you're going to, you know, cross over from your ICE platform over into your EV clients.
Are you an App Auto Care Center ready to elevate your shop? Then it's time to step into the premier tier NAPA Auto Care Gold Certified Program. Gold Certified Centers are recognized as the best of the best, delivering a consistent, trusted customer experience nationwide. Now, that consistency means more repeat business, more referrals, and more opportunities to grow your car count. Now, when you're gold certified, you unlock advanced resources, maximizing technology, boosting your local marketing presence, and keeping your team fully trained on the latest trends and tools. In short, gold certified status separates you from the rest. So what does it take to be gold? To qualify, your shop must be a NAPA Auto Care Center for at least 1 year, have been open for 2 years or more, employ an ASE Master Technician or hold ASE Blue Seal status, co-brand with the Pro Image program, maintain a 4-star rating or higher on Google, Yelp, or NAPA CSI, use digital vehicle inspections, offer NAPA consumer financing, purchase $7,500 or more in NAPA parts monthly, and participate in a Napa Business Development Group. It's a true partnership, and in return, Napa rewards gold-certified shops with premium benefits like free priority placement on the NapaOnline.com locator, annual marketing funds, enhanced warranties, rebates, training opportunities, and a whole lot more. Are you ready to take your shop to the gold level? Well, contact your local Napa sales representative today to see if you qualify and start your journey to gold certified. Increase car count, build trust with customers, and stand out as one of the best. Talk to your local Napa representative today. Let's face it, your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NapaTrax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. We provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. NapaTrax offers the industry's best post-sale support, hands down, and we train your people on site. Yep, on site. And we offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give us a call, visit the website, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. NapaTrax is always customized and tailored for you, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at NapaTrax, that's NapaTrax.com. It's amazing to hear you and to then have another individual listen to you and say, damn, Scott's making too much sense. Why have I waited? And or what do I need to do to get in it? And are my people capable or do they have the right everything to get in it? And I always go back to the ohms, volts, and amps. I know a little bit of it, but not enough. I could probably burn my house down if I played with the electrical here, right? And we all need to have that level of education. And I remember spending a week at the Napa EV Ready Training Center in Canton and watching Bill Weaver do his thing. And it was amazing to see from start up with PPE on day one to, here, we're going to play with this battery at the end of the day with everybody with PPE on in total respect of what could happen. But if you don't have a certain, you know, ASE cert or I do believe a Volt, Ohms, and Amps, you know, classes under your belt, it would be a waste of your time to even consider going into it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends on your demographic. I mean, if you're in the middle of Montana, your total addressable market is pretty minimal. Here, of course, you know, we're in an EV world here. There's lots of EVs. So there's a pretty good market. There's a lot of runway ahead of us, and there's a lot of unknowns. You know, a lot of the battery life on these vehicles is always a subject. The cars do carry a mandated warranty, and in some cases, California vehicles have a little bit longer warranty. Those batteries are going to, time will tell what happens. This is another market opportunity for shops out there. If they really want to try to get ahead of the curve or catch up, start paying attention to these vehicles. One, that they probably should get one in their fleet, whether it's for their shop or what have you, so that they gain familiarization. I'm on my third Tesla now, and we have two Prius vehicles here. We have a Toyota Highlander EV, and we also have two Lexus small crossover SUV. Those are all shop vehicles. Those are loaner cars that we give to our clients. In some cases, we're having to first-time customers driving a hybrid vehicle, and we have to give them coaching on that. But nevertheless, you get familiarization with these vehicles and what they're doing and what looks normal, what looks abnormal. Start looking at the battery health on these vehicles.
I read a lot of articles, and it seems like the battery issue or the battery as a component is moving so rapidly as far as technology and changes. Am I thinking right?
Well, somewhat. There's a lot of push to make that battery more robust, and they're making minor changes to chemistry of the battery. But in general, you know, we've got lithium ion batteries out there. That's the majority of the car park out there, so to speak. And, you know, the batteries will live a long life as long as, you know, they're treated accordingly. Now, some vehicles, a customer needs to read the owner's manual. If you're talking about a BEV, some of the LFP-equipped vehicles require you to charge it. Every time you charge it, they want you to go to 100%. Whereas you have a lithium-ion platform for daily use, you know, 60 to 80% is really where you charge it to. In some cases, you don't even need to charge it every day, depending on your commute and your use case. So understanding the use there is pretty important, and I think will help with longevity. Folks that supercharge all the time, you know, there's a lot of talk out there that people are saying, hey, if you DC fast charge, you're cooking that battery. Well, most of the cars actually have really good thermal management systems on them to prevent you from actually cooking that battery. My professional opinion is that the jury is still out on whether or not the supercharging is going to be reflect negatively on the overall lifespan of that battery. But we'll see. I mean, we're in uncharted waters right now. That's where I was kind of keying in on some of the tools and equipment that are available out there in the marketplace. It gives us visibility into the battery's state of health or some data metrics that we can use to say, okay, these are things that I need to be paying attention to. When problems start to pop up, you'll be able to identify when those are happening and either help the customer through, you know, some recommended services or prep them to budget for battery replacement.
Is the largest expense, if you wanted to purchase, would be the battery lift?
Yeah, for a shop, I would say I have a lift table here. It's not capable of doing the big batteries. And I have not had a call yet to swap out a battery. That is a pretty expensive component. But if you're going to be in this market, you know, you've got some runway to work with. You can pencil that out and figure out what your return will be. But you don't know.
Yeah. Otherwise, what's the investment besides the table? What is it? $4,000 or $5,000?
You're going to probably have a few lift devices. You're going to have like a gantry or an A-frame to move that battery around on your property or inside your shop, removing it off of a truck that comes to deliver it. You're going to have a device there. You're going to be able to lift it onto your lift table and, you know, get it situated. So those are two of the big expensive items. You know, the rest is basic tooling and service information. I mean, you need to follow the service information. If you want to get hands-on with a lot of disassembly stuff, you know, there are a lot of trainers out there doing stuff. One that I would recommend a lot of the educators go to is another educator, John Kelly, up at Weber State in Utah. And he has a boot camp program. He actually has a prerequisite to attend the 1 week boot camp where you're taking everything apart. You need to attend his online trainings, one of its safety level, and then there's some fundamental training, 1 week of boot camp. And I've talked to numerous instructors that have been through that boot camp, and they just, you know, they rave about the experience that they get because they're getting to take it apart and see how it's actually done and see how things get disconnected and reconnected and how you facilitate that whole operation. So you're better equipped to get your shop up to speed and prepared to deliver these services.
Why would we as an industry turn a blind eye to all this new tech and opportunity? And here's the reason that I say this. Scott, you said, I want to buy a Tesla so bad, but I don't have a car payment right now. Why do I want one? Right? I get that. And why would we want to walk away from the opportunity that we have? You were probably the first in your marketplace to do this. And I think that's the crowning jewel of wanting to do this or telling people that you do to get the education, to make sure the tooling is right and our people are up to speed. PPE is there. And you hang the shingle. And if there's nobody for 5 miles, Scott, you end up being it. And in 5 years, your it is a crowning jewel.
And I've had people, you know, debate, hey, you know, what's an EV? What's it cost? And a lot of confusion over what is that energy? What's the cost of that energy to go into that vehicle? They understand the gas. They know how much the gas is. They know how many miles per gallon that the car will travel. But they don't quite understand the change in energy. So you were complaining about making a claim, hey, I don't have a car payment. Well, I go, all right, if you drive, or did you know that if you drive a car that gets 30 miles to the gallon and you drive that car for 100,000 miles and you're buying gas here in California, it's still at $5 a gallon, that you're going to spend $16,600 roughly to go that 100,000 miles. If you had an EV and you're paying California's ridiculous cost per kilowatt hour is about 40 cents, which is insane. You're going to spend about $8,000. It's roughly 50%. Then on top of that, if you had solar in your house, you're making your own energy, you're con- controlling your own costs, that offset is, it continues to grow, that offset or that delta between the gas car and the EV. There are some interesting metrics to use. And frankly, you know, when every time I see a car in our shop, it's up in the air, we're taking, you know, pulling a fuel tank out or pulling the exhaust off and all this, I go, man, this car is requiring lots and lots of maintenance, not the same maintenance level that you get in an EV. Are you changing fluids periodically? Maybe you're doing some suspension work. Wheels and tires, or wheel alignments and tires, are probably the number one, you know, service item, because these cars are 30 to 40% heavier. They have a lot more torque. So a lot of times, first-time EV drivers, they just love that torque until their first tire bill comes. And then they realize that they can be a little more moderate on that, on the go pedal, to minimize that tire wear.
So what's it going to take to change the mind of people? Now these EV mandates are not there for whatever right or wrong reason. What's it going to take? Or is it going to take an individual like you at the counter when someone comes up to you and says, hey, Scott, I'm looking to buy a car. What would you recommend?
Yeah, well, it's going to take, you know, engagement of the community. This last Saturday, local little airport here, the oldest family-owned airport in the United States, had their 80th birthday party. I've been working over there with the folks at that airport for a long time. So I took a couple cars over there, and I took a couple of my apprentice technicians with me. And we took my Cybertruck, and we had it partially disassembled, took another car, collector car, and we had some engagement. And we had lots of people asking questions about EVs and had not seen them. And then we had some people come up to us and say, oh my God, I just bought an EV because my daughter bought one. And we cannot believe it. And I had one guy, he's a Ford technician. We were just talking. And he just flat out said, you know what, 5 years ago, I would have said, you'd never catch me, I'd be dead if I was in a Tesla or an EV. And he says, not anymore. He says, now that I own one and I understand what it does, it's absolutely amazing. So it's not something that's going to be a complete solution for everybody. You know, we had the mandates and all that I wasn't really fond of saying, yeah, we got to go there, because it doesn't make sense for everybody. But I think people need to give it a fair shake and understand their economics around the energy and the use case, especially if you're a commuter, does make a lot of sense. And if you then pile on the ADAS component, okay, you know, again, we're in California here, where we have a higher vehicle population than the country of Australia. You know, there's lots of vehicles, which means there's lots of congestion. If you're driving an EV and it has driving capabilities, kind of like what the Teslas do, and I drive this stuff every day, it's so convenient to let that car handle all of those dynamic driving tasks to keep you safe and just handle the menial things that are happening. And so the future is going to paint a pretty rosy picture of operating in an EV state. I've driven, you know, cars that are ICE propelled that have, you know, some comparable driver assistance capabilities. And it's just not the same. The acceleration and stuff because of a gas car is completely different, and they just do not respond accordingly. And it's just really, it's just kind of messy, to be a non-technical term.
Scott, a few years ago, I was at the Peterson Museum in LA, and they had an electric car there. I think it was from maybe the late 1800s, maybe 1890 or something.
A Baker, probably.
I can't remember what it was, but I was sitting there and my mouth was open and I just couldn't believe. I think it was before the Model T. They were energizing vehicles with batteries.
Yeah, back there were hundreds of electric car manufacturers back then. The big push then was nice and easy to drive your car, but the downside was that the batteries stunk, you know, when you had to charge them, they had a lot of gassing and everything else. And then, of course, they're real heavy. And then a gallon of gas only weighs 8 pounds versus those batteries. That's what caused that shift, right? So now that we're in this phase where the technology has evolved to a point where these EVs are highly efficient and battery technology has continued to evolve, the EVs are making a comeback.
Based on the connectivity you have to our great industry, do you see that the ICE engine will ever get zero emissions?
An ICE engine is only that thermal efficient to about 27%, maybe 35 on a really efficient. So all that energy that you're creating from burning that fuel, only a very small percentage makes it to the tire to move you forward. You're creating a lot of waste heat and everything. And what they are doing to these cars to make them clean, I mean, you've got now two types of fuel injection. You've got direct injection, you've got port injection in most cases. You've got, you know, exhaust treatment, catalytic converters. If it's a diesel, you've got all this massive exhaust after treatment and very complex fuel systems. And when those have failures, it becomes a very expensive. So it just seems to me that they're continuing to add on all these things to make this ICE engine still somewhat compliant and useful, where that electric machine, I think, is going to end up winning, you know, in most cases, unless you're, again, like in Montana, having to tow horse trailers and move farm equipment and all that kind of stuff.
Are you paying attention to hydrogen at all?
Well, you know, hydrogen, it's a similar thing. The fuel cell is creating electricity to do propulsion. I did have some experience with some hydrogen stuff several years ago. I did a bunch of testing here, but these guys were running hydrogen and actually burning it in an ICE vehicle, trying to lower emissions and what have you. But even then, the tanks and the infrastructure, it was just super, super cumbersome. And in fact, today, you know, in California, they were selling the Toyota Mirai. And now the infrastructure is pulling back. There's a few charging stations or fueling stations for hydrogen that are going to be shutting their doors if they haven't already. So a lot of this stuff is, to me, I don't see the hydrogen. I don't see the runway on that platform. I see the BEV. The BEV stuff is probably got the biggest opportunity for survival.
I love your word runway. And I know you're an aviator, so you get that. To my listener, please use the word runway that Scott has been saying in a bunch of times for your forward-looking, forward-thinking strategy on adding a strength or specialty to your business. You cannot stay stagnant. And I guess when you've down the throttle, you've got to have it, to your point, runway in order to be able to bring in this new technologies, new opportunities, and the new maintenance programs for your clients, because your clients are going to move in those directions and you have to be prepared for them. If not, you're going to lose those clients. You could lose that electric vehicle to an EV specialty shop that still is smart enough to do ICE, and you don't want to lose that. I guess to your point is one home, one house, one place, come to Connie and Dick's, we do it all.
Yeah. And one thing we didn't touch on there is the charging. We did talk a little bit about charging, but some people don't realize that they can charge at home. They can put in a charger. It might cost them a little bit of money. Sometimes the automaker will have an incentivized offer to subsidize that installation. But what's interesting here is that I have actually done service calls where I've gone to the client's house because it's not charging at their house. We verified it charges at the shop. We've got chargers here. Doesn't charge at home. So I go there and I'm troubleshooting and I'm doing a little bit of testing to figure out what's going on with their home charging. So that's another service that you're able to offer, because who else do they call? Do they call an electrician? Well, yeah, the electrician might come out and he'll say, well, this part's okay. I don't know why it's not talking to the car. But yeah, the technician, you know, I take a scan tool up there and I can plug it in. I can see the data metrics. I can see that there's likely a problem with their charger and make a firm diagnosis. That's another reason a shop may want to put one in their fleet, right? So they can gain familiarity and understand what that use case is so that they can better communicate with their clients, continue to further their business.
So buy a Tesla, buy a Prius, and loan it, drive it, learn it, play with it, and put the shingle up.
I have three Teslas. I think I mentioned that earlier. I have a Model 3, an older one, but it's still, I mean, it's, you know, that's the first software-defined vehicle that I've ever had. And it's amazing that car now is 6 or 7 years old. The use case and the electronics and the driver interface is like modern day. It has continued to keep up with just like your cell phone. So we're going to probably put that in as a special loaner for certain clients, further that experience and continue to build a business here in the shop.
18 episodes with me since I've gotten to know you, and here's the 19th going. And, you know, you've been on a lot of panels over the years, you know, I sure appreciate reading your P10 articles. How long have you been doing that?
That's been going on for about 5 years now. Yeah.
And you know, they go on and on and on, and they're so in-depth, Scott. Wow, the research you do.
Yeah. When you go on the website, it says it only takes about 8 minutes to read it. So it's not really that long.
Well, whatever. The point of it is that when you read a paragraph that's got the content in it that you provide and you say, I got to remember this. To me, the content is so good. I think it takes a little longer. You want to skim it for 8 minutes or you want to really read it, spend 15. Right.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. They do take a long time to put together. Anybody else out there listening that's an author, you know, writing technical articles, takes a lot of research and a lot of testing and a lot of acquisition. And I, you know, everything I do, I acquire for, or everything I write about, I acquire, and I want to know it frontwards and backwards. And
you've done it. Been there, done that. Damn. Yeah, I'll never forget the videos. And again, we're going back a bunch of years where you were in the shop moving things around and what the cameras were. I mean, it was some of the most fascinating junkyard dog style stuff that you did to prove what the cameras were seeing and how the software was reacting. Are you still doing any of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm still doing that. I and two other educators co-published, co-authored a textbook. We talked about that on one of our episodes, ADAS for Colleges, through Goodhart Wilcox. We're in the middle of actually doing the next version of that. We're working together and creating content like that. But I will touch on the reason I did that back then is because I had gone to, you know, some training and was really trying to get my head wrapped around it. Every time I go to training, I'm walking away with, I need more. I need more info. I don't quite understand exactly what's going on here. And so I was trying to learn it on my terms. And then when I started taking a deep dive into the computer vision science, and understanding how these cameras were working and how the radar sensors were perceiving or measuring, I said, I've got to be able to show this. I need to show this. As soon as I saw it, my head just, my light bulbs all went off. And I said, oh, now I understand what's going on. And it's helped me become a better troubleshooter. When you have problems with calibration or things aren't working, now you can kind of get a sense of how that system is perceiving that environment and why it may have a deficiency in certain conditions. So yeah, that was my big push, and I still do that. I just did some training last July, this last past July, for ASE at their annual educational conference. And this was in St. Louis. And I did two of my ADAS classes there, and I had all my tools there and cameras and radar and got to demonstrate that. And I did two technology Cybertruck classes at the same during that same event. So four classes in, and boy, I had a blast. Got a lot of really good feedback, and people are still gravitating towards that. So I think I'm hitting on the right marks there.
Okay. This is the final thing I'm going to ask you. We kind of started out in the beginning talking about me going to Keith's class and seeing that 1 degree off on the radar, and how do we explain this to our clients? Either it's the discussion that we had, maybe we'll push people to realize that ADAS and EV have to be part of their future runway and added. But what are we going to be able to say to the client who says, I'm sorry, I'm going to go down for the $99 alignment. They said, I don't need a calibration. What are you going to say to a client? You're going to refuse to do that if you don't get the calibration. Am I right?
Yeah, likely we're just not going to do the job if we can't put that vehicle back into service properly. Two, it puts us at risk. All right. So if the manufacturer explicitly says, you must do this operation following this operation. And if we don't do it, and that car, something happens to that car, even if it does, it gets in a collision because somebody ran into them, nothing to do with the ADAS operation, the lawyers will go after you. They will find that you did not follow a procedure, you didn't repair the vehicle as per what the manufacturer says, and they will find something wrong. It'll cost you money no matter what. So don't even put yourself in that position. I actually had a conversation recently with a local glass company here, just a startup, and I asked him about his solution for the calibration. And he said, well, we've done a few. We just don't unplug the camera, and we had never had a problem. And I said, I need to really think about this, because you're going to put yourself in jeopardy and create a big problem. So yeah, it's an education at every aspect here. The consumer needs to be aware. The service provider really needs to be aware. And we need to just do better.
And it kind of reminds me, and again, I want to yield to the ASE piece and why a certification in all these particular areas matters, or it doesn't matter to the consumer, doesn't necessarily matter to the professionals in our industry, but it must and it should. If you need a license to do nails and hair, but you don't need any kind of certification or license to play around with an ADAS system, with a camera system or a radar system, it's wrong. And we're going to have a big liability, a national big exposure liability one day, and then everybody's going to wake up and say, wow, I dodged a bullet, and now I got to get serious.
Yeah, you know, it's the low-hanging fruit, okay? So the way I explain that is that if you have your paperwork, if you have your processes in place and your procedures in place and your documentation in place and you're doing everything right, you're hitting all the marks, and a lawsuit comes up, there's discovery requests for data around a car you worked on or whatever, if you've got the documentation, the lawyers are going to start looking through that and they're going to go, oh, there's no low-hanging fruit here. We're going to move on and find something else wrong. That's the way I look at it. You know, we're doing everything in our capability to put that vehicle back in service. Of course, things can still go wrong, but even the accreditation, right, the ASC certification, every one of those data points are going to add to your comprehensive service offering. Your credibility is really at stake here. And so associating yourself with these either trade associations or partnering with like your NAPA folks, you know, the certifications through ASE and others are going to only help you elevate your brand and your offering and your professionalism.
Hey, Scott, thanks for all you do. And thanks for being on the cutting edge of all of this stuff. I mean, we need to make sure that we listen to any words of wisdom that come out of you. We must do it.
Well, thank you. And I'll see you at Apex here in about a month or so.
Yeah, I'll see you in Apex soon. Scott Brown, Connie and Dix. Diag.net. Damn, you're a busy guy.
Yeah, and I will be doing a Cybertruck technology session at Apex on Tuesday, 10:30. I'm sure the folks at AutoCare would appreciate my little plug there and hope to see you there.
Oh, that'd be great.
Sign up for my class Tuesday, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30. Well, it should be really, really good.
Well, it'll be packed, I'm sure. All right, man. Thanks. See you, bud. Appreciate everything. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Take care, Carm.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.